And who would you consider your kind of comedy Mount Rushmore? Jewish comedy Mount Rushmore.
That's very difficult. It would be like a Mount Rushmore of like 20 heads. Look, you could go from Groucho to the Three Stooges, Jerry Lewis, Rickles, Shelley Berman, Lenny Bruce, obviously, Robert Klein, major figure, Gilbert Gottfried, Dave Attell, I love. I mean, it's endless. There are so many great Jewish comedians. It's almost absurd. Hello, my name is Eddie Portnoy. I'm the academic advisor at the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research, and I worked extensively on our course, Is Anything Okay? The History of Jews and Comedy in America, which you could find at yivo.org/comedy.
Yes, that is the voice of Eddie Portnoy, and you've tuned into a new episode of Comedy History 101, where we school you in comedy. I am Harmon. Hello. Hope everyone is having a good day. And as mentioned, Eddie is the man behind the new course, Is Anything Okay? The History of Jews in Comedy in America, which launches March 21st. Is Anything Okay? Features interviews with such comedians as W. Kamau Bell, Louis Black, Jenna Friedman, Mark Maron, Paul Reiser, Judy Gold.
Humor keeps the tragic in check.
Comedy is a weapon
to fight against anti-Semitism.
Survival because of your wits.
If you don't have physical prowess, try comedy.
There's something positive about joking about the negative.
And you can find out more about the course at vivo.org/comedy. But before we jump into the episode, remember to take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your fine podcasts. Or you can leave a comment at comedyhistory101.com. And we'll actually read your comments right here on the podcast. Also, a few quick plugs. This Friday and Saturday, March 22nd and 23rd, I'll be performing in London, England at the Rosemary Branch Theater, 7 p.m. with my solo show, Harmon Leon in The Joke Saved My Soul. So if you're out in the UK, come on by and say hello. Also on April 4th, 9:30, at the People's Improv Theater in Manhattan, I'll be producing my show, AI versus Human Roast Battle. Come out and see a human comedian take on a machine learning AI in a roast battle of tomorrow. And you can find out all these tour dates on my site, harmonleon.com, or via the social medias at Harmon Leon. And now, without further ado.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
I'm trying to use the phone!
Excuse me!
Comedy History 101. I'm very excited to jump right in.
All right, jump away.
To start the jumping, what joke does the title of the course come from? Is Anything Okay?
Sure. So this is sort of like an old Catskills Borscht Belt joke. Jewish women are sitting in a restaurant. Waiter walks over to them and says, is anything okay? So it's sort of like a misogynistic. I don't think it's a joke you could do any longer, but it sort of fit with the class. It sort of fits with the sense of Jewish dissatisfaction with everything. And, you know, we thought it was a good title.
Yeah. And also I noted from the videos and stuff that one of the faces of the course is Gilbert Gottfried. And what does Gilbert Gottfried and his humor say about Jewish humor?
In his own humor?
I'll leave that question open to interpretation. He's so iconic. Why would you choose Gilbert Gottfried?
So I guess first of all, question. I love Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert Gottfried also had agreed to be interviewed for this class, but sadly passed away before we could do it. which was really tragic for us. And obviously it's tragic loss for everyone. But, you know, Gilbert's whole persona is an old Jewish man.
Jerry Seinfeld as Hamlet.
To be or not to be. I don't know if I should be or not.
And he frequently told sort of classic Jewish jokes and did classic Jewish bits, Yiddish accents. He had a character of kind of a fake rabbi that he used to do with you know, kind of comedy prayers. Like Gilbert was kind of the last bastion of a type of, let's say, Borscht Belt comedian that to a large degree no longer exists.
And how would you describe the Borscht Belt comedian in its place in both comedy history and Jewish comedy history?
Well, in comedy history, the Borscht Belt, and maybe I should talk about Jewish history first because it's sort of chronologically, I think it works better. The Borscht Belt developed as a vacation area in Ulster County and Sullivan County, New York, which is about two and a half hours north of New York City. It developed as a vacation area for all kinds of people, but mostly Jews, which is a bit odd, but because why would you have to have a vacation spot that was specific to Jews? And the reason you did was because in the early part of the 20th century, many hotels were restricted, meaning they would not accept Jewish guests. In fact, some of them wouldn't even accept Jewish employees. So as a result, if Jews wanted to take vacations, they had to develop their own network of hotels and places to stay. And the way that this developed initially was that Jews who, you know, mainly live in the Lower East Side, and I guess just for contextual purposes, in the first quarter of the 20th century, something like 500,000 Jews lived on the Lower East Side. It was, you know, the largest Jewish neighborhood in the entire world. You also had, you know, hundreds of thousands of Jews in Brooklyn. The whole New York area had about 2 million Jews at the time. It was the largest Jewish settlement in the world, at least city-wise, an urban settlement at least. And so most of these people were immigrants and the children of immigrants. They were not wealthy, but you know, many of them worked in the garment industry and in various sweatshops of various kinds. But people, no matter who they are, want to break from the city and they want to take vacations, and they need to take vacations if they're able to afford. So there were many Jewish farmers in the Catskills who rented rooms to these people, and they would come up for a week at a time, things like that. And for whatever weird reason, there was already a sort of vacation industry already existed in the Catskills, and hotels already existed. But as I said, they wouldn't accept Jewish guests. And these hotels, you know, were very well heeled. They had dances and they had hunting and they had, you know, fishing, things like that. You know, Jews mostly didn't hunt, but they wanted to develop some sort of entertainment of their own. And so the first kind of entertainment Jews developed in the Catskills was a mock wedding. They were really drag weddings where the groom was a woman and the bride was a man. And these were run by a traditional figure in Jewish life known as a badchen, which is a Jewish wedding jester. And the Jewish wedding jester traditionally, you know, ran the wedding and cracked jokes and, you know, tried to make it a fun event. So they turned these mock weddings into these sort of fun events where, you know, you had an MC and that was the badchen, you know, running the show. You had this drag wedding going on. They would have, you know, bands and dancing. And this was really the first form of entertainment. Once people from the Yiddish theater, you know, found out that there was entertainment, they went up there and they wanted to work. And it slowly became a whole industry, and comedy became an integral part of that industry. You know, there's a long time association with Jews and comedy, you know, from, I would say, the 30s through the 70s, you know, a majority of comedians in America were Jewish. And many of them went to the Catskills to, you know, hone their chops, you know, in front of these audiences that would talk back to them. They would heckle them. And, you know, sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. But great comedians and comedy writers came out of the Catskills. You know, Mel Brooks came, you know, he first started working in the Catskills. You know, Carl Reiner, Sid Caesar, Don Rickles, Buddy Hackett, Milton Berle, Jerry Lewis. Like, it's like a long list of people who got their starts in this place. And it was really one of, I mean, obviously, you know, people are working in New York City too. People eventually would come to work in Las Vegas. And there were in other, you know, major cities, you had this phenomenon as well. But between New York City and the Catskills, you have this sort of huge network of places to perform because the Catskills hotels were so Jewish, you know, Jewishly oriented. It became kind of an easy home for these people where they, you know, they felt comfortable, you know, where felt comfortable enough to, you know, make fun of the hotel owners, make fun of the guests. It was a very informal atmosphere. Whereas to a large degree, stand-up comedy through the 40s, 50s, and 60s was just sort of comedians up there telling jokes, rapid fire, you know, until you get to people like, you know, Lenny Bruce, Woody Allen, where the dynamic totally changes.
Would they have like a routine that would just be specific to the Catskills? And then say when they're back in New York City playing the clubs, they would have a completely different routine? Or would it be kind of carry over, or so the Catskills would come back to New York City?
Yeah, I think that there, you know, there were definitely differences. I think, you know, you play to your audience. And, you know, in a lot of, and, you know, Robert Klein had a famous bit about this where, you know, he said that when he was a kid and his parents took him to the Catskills, you know, the comedians would, you know, would tell this long joke and then the punchline would be in Yiddish and he wouldn't understand it.
They did this sometimes and it drove me crazy. I don't understand Yiddish. And the guy has me hooked on a good story and I'm trailing on. You know what happened last night? I went to my wife. I said, let's make love. She said, I can't. Went to that doctor, got a pill. You know what happened?
A chronology of this where initially the jokes themselves are in Yiddish. And then as Jewish Americans begin to acculturate, you know, as the immigrant generations, you know, get older and the American born children who nonetheless may, you know, grew up speaking Yiddish, you know, when they become the majority, you have comedians who will, you know, like Klein says, they tell jokes in English and the punchlines in Yiddish. And then you also have this phenomenon of dialect humor where you have people doing jokes just in Yiddish accents. And the Yiddish accent became, you know, thanks to people like Myron Cohen and especially Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks really, more than anybody, the Yiddish accent becomes a comic foil in American comedy. The whole 2,000-year-old man was done in a Yiddish accent. Mel Brooks' first Academy Award came from a short film that he did in 1963 called The Critic. I don't know, are you familiar with this?
No, but I know the 2,000-year-old man, of
right,
course.
So before The 2,000-year-old Man, there's this short film that Mel Brooks creates called The Critic. And this old Jewish guy goes into a movie theater and you don't see him. You only hear him, but he goes and he sits down in the movie theater and he's talking to himself and a movie comes on and it's this sort of abstract art cartoon or abstract art animation. And he, you know, analyzes it according to what he knows. And it's all in a Yiddish accent. It's all in Yiddish accent in English. And it's really funny.
What the hell is this? Must be a cartoon. Shh. Must be Bife. This looks like Bife. I remember when I was a boy in Russia, it was biology. It was Bife. Up, oh, it's born. Whatever it is, it's born. Look out. Too late. It's dead already.
So, and he got an Academy Award for it. It's his first Academy Award. And I, you know, it's not well known anymore, but that was sort of his first foray into, you know, doing this kind of thing. And, you know, he realized that it had legs and longevity, and it, you know, people loved it. And, you know, some people, and I think that, you know, today, for instance, doing dialect humor is completely offensive. You know, Apu, you know, was obviously, that was removed from The Simpsons. People find this really offensive, except Jews don't. Jews like it. They think it's really funny. And I don't know, you know, it's hard to say why Jews are willing to accept, you know, this kind of mockery, maybe because it's self-mockery, something that they, if they do it themselves, it's far more acceptable. And generally, I think that that's, you know, that's basically the same in most cultures. It's something that started, at, you know, during a period in the early 19, or in the early 20th century, when dialect humor was the norm.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, vaudeville was all about ethnic stereotypes.
Yes.
And right. Surprisingly, I believe it was the Irish that actually were the first to kind of say this is wrong.
Yes.
in vaudeville theater.
Right. Right. So, you know, obviously African-Americans with, you know, blackface, they didn't like that either, but they had no voice. And that's really the difference. The Irish created committees, you know, to stop the phenomenon of the sort of stage Irishman, you know, who was portrayed as a drunk, you know, with a million kids. It was this like sort of classic stereotype. And they were largely successful in, you know, having it, you know, having it reduced and then ultimately removed completely. In the case of Jews, it's somewhat different because what happens is the phenomenon of the stage Jew or Jew face starts in around the 1880s. And it's entirely Gentile performers performing as Jews. They would put on fake beards and putty noses. You know, they wear black hats and black coats. On stage, they would haggle and they were sort of like bumbling fools. They all had Yiddish accents. You know, they were portrayed as greedy. They would be shown, you know, setting fire to their stores to get the insurance. You know, they were incredibly negative stereotypes. But what's interesting about it is by the first decade of the 20th century, Jews begin to perform in these roles.
Was it like sort of about like taking back the power of... You know, if we're to see this anyway, we might as well be the ones to own it.
Right. I think it was less that than we can do a better job making fun of ourselves than these other people. That was the real sense that they had. And then it was a way to work. It was, you know, it was a job. You know, it was a job in theater. And that's what, you know, that's what these people wanted more than anything. But one of the odd things about this phenomenon in the Jewish world was that in 1909, the Central Conference of American Rabbis, which was a Reform Jewish organization, you know, they investigated this and found it incredibly offensive and, you know, fomented anti-Semitism. And so they created an investigation because they wanted to do what the Irish did and put an end to this, these negative portrayals of Jews on stage. So they investigated, and what they discovered was that by, you know, 1910, the vast majority of performers doing this were Jewish. The theater managers were Jewish, the theater owners were often Jewish, and the audiences were almost entirely Jewish. And so their conclusion was, if Jews want to pay to see these portrayals of themselves, it's impossible to stop them. And so nothing was done. And it just sort of continued until that type of entertainment petered out in around the 1930s. But it remained, you know, as a form of dialect humor with comedians telling jokes with Yiddish accents or Yiddish or English jokes with Yiddish punchlines, you know, this type of phenomenon where Yiddish winds up being this comic foil that, I mean, you see it a lot less today than you used to, but it was really for many, many years up to the end of the 20th century, a mainstay in American comedy. I want to say maybe the last time I remember seeing it is in the Harold and Kumar movies. You know, they have these two Jewish characters who are kind of like have these Yiddish accents, and they're kind of like these, I mean, it's funny, but they're these stereotype characters.
Yeah, I mean, well, Yiddish is funny because there's a lot of like K's and hard consonants, you know, so right. Therefore it's, you know, intrinsically funny to say Yiddish words.
Right, I think, you know, you know, certain accents when you, you know, if you're not a native speaker of that language, if let's say you're, you know, you're an English speaker and that's the only language you know, certain accents sound funny, you know, others don't, and others sound abrasive. It's like it all depends on your ear and how, you know, how you take in, you know, these sounds. But yeah, I think that some people say, I mean, Yiddish isn't inherently, it's not inherently a funny language.
Right.
It's just a language like any other, but you know, it's all about how it's perceived, you know, by other people.
And then just going through your course, you know, stems a long period of time from like, you know, 1800s on. What are common threads in Jewish humor in both maybe joke structure or use of like satire?
So
that could stem from early days, you know, which you cover in the course to, you know, modern times.
Right. So common threads, I would say one of the most common threads is self-mockery.
So I tell you, comedy, huh? Comedy, it's in my blood. I wish it was in my act.
Like that's something that's existed since at least the 19th century. You have this phenomenon of self-criticism that's really a central part of Jewish joking. You know, as far as joke structure goes, that changes pretty dramatically over the years. The earliest Jewish joke books, in fact, there's a folklore scholar by the name of Elliot Oering, wrote a book a few years ago. I can't remember the exact title, but it's about the first Jewish joke book. And it comes out, it's published in Germany in something like 1810, something like 1812 maybe. But the jokes aren't, you know, line, punchline. Or like three items, then punchline. They're, you know, that takes many years to get developed. They're more like, you know, little stories, little anecdotes, you know, and many, some of them have punchlines, some of them don't. After that, you have Yiddish joke books that begin to come out. There's a bunch of them that come out in the 1860s onward. These joke books begin coming out in Eastern Europe and what's now, you know, Poland. It was the Russian Empire, but it's now Poland, Ukraine, this sort of area. These jokes take the same form. They're sort of like little stories, little anecdotes, you know, with some kind of punchline. Sometimes they're incomprehensible. They just don't, you know, 150-year-old jokes, often in Yiddish, don't often translate well.
Yeah, product of its time.
right. No, jokes are topical and they are very much back to the times. And you know, often they, you know, they're not funny. They don't make sense. You know, if you're a historian and you could kind of develop the context for these little stories, you can see how they might have been funny. But it's like, you know, in order to present those to a modern audience, it's just sort of impossible.
Yeah, and one thing you touch upon, or at least touches upon in the trailer for the course, is just Jewish humor as sort of a survival mechanism. Again, is that a common thread you see like all throughout history? I mean, I guess
sure.
It's sort of obvious, but yeah.
Right. I mean, so, you know, this is something that, you know, a lot of people have said that, you know, Jews use jokes or humor as a defense mechanism, you know, as a, you know, as sort of a survival tool. And, you know, Jews have always been this really small minority. And in places like the Russian Empire, where, you know, they were very much oppressed with, you know, no civil rights, they, you know, were often attacked. Pogroms were in certain times and places were relatively common. There was sort of a real fear in general life. You know, the idea was that if you don't laugh, you'll cry, and it's better to laugh. And so early Yiddish writers like Sholem Aleichem, who was the author who wrote the stories on which The Fiddler on the Roof was based, you know, used to say that the basic nature of Jewish humor is laughter through tears. And he would also say things like laughter is healthy. You know, doctors prescribe laughter. That's, you know, and then this is sort of like in a very folkloric way, but he mostly wrote humorous stories. On the other hand, there are certain Yiddish writers at the time who also wrote humorous stories, but were also included very, very sharp satiric and you could even say negative portrayals of Jews of that period. They're also really funny. They make a mockery. You know, the vast majority of Jews at the time were, you know, poor, uneducated according to modern standards. They were superstitious. They were considered to be very backward. So these Yiddish writers wanted to change that, and they thought they could change that by presenting a mirror to these Jews of themselves to show them what they looked like. And they did it by using satire in order to, you know, really, you know, mock these communities of Jews. To a certain degree, it worked because, you know, it's not entirely clear because there are a lot of variables here. From this period, Jews begin to become a much more modern people. They begin involving themselves in, you know, and it's a slow process, but through literature and through the newspaper, they begin to learn about the world around them. You know, before this, they're living in small villages, and they don't really know anything about the outside world. You know, one example that I was getting, in the first Yiddish newspaper that came out in the Russian Empire, which started coming out in 1862, in the third issue, there's an article about the giant sequoia trees in California. It talks about how the trees are considered to be 8 to 10,000 years old. They describe them as being taller than the tallest tower you've ever seen and wider than the widest house you've ever seen. And, you know, they're describing them to people who have never seen anything like this. So a few months later, there's a letter appears in this newspaper from a reader. And it says, "Dear editor, I really enjoy this story on these giant sequoia trees in this place called California, but I think you may have made a mistake, because you said these trees are thought to be 8 to 10,000 years old, which is impossible because the world itself is only 5,623 years old. And that's according to the Jewish calendar, you know, the traditional Jewish calendar. So there's, and that's the worldview of these people. You know, when these writers are, you know, trying to change this, you know, they do it by, you know, injecting stories about these people with really sharp satire and humor in order to sort of jumpstart them into modernity.
Excuse me!
Jumping ahead to modern day, could you just give us a little bit of overview of the course and who is involved, the comedians?
Sure. You know, the course goes from 19th century Eastern Europe, you know, immigration and immigration humor in New York, the transition from Yiddish to English, whole Borscht Belt story plays a pretty major role. And then you get up through, you know, radio, TV, and modern stand-up comedy. So the comedians that are in the course talking about all this include Lewis Black.
"What you think is criticism is nothing compared to the self-loathing I can bring to the table."
Paul Reiser.
"If you don't have physical prowess, try comedy."
Judy Gold.
"Joan was the goat. Is goat kosher?"
Jenna Friedman.
"Were there comedians in Nazi Germany?"
Who else do we have? Alan Zweibel. Yes, Alan Zweibel.
"Two old Jewish men are on the Titanic. One of them starts sobbing. The other one says, 'What are you crying for? It's not your boat.'"
So he's really interesting, and he's like a great bridge because he got his start in the Catskills when the Catskills was ending.
Was he writing for? I forgot.
He wrote for a comedian named Morty Gunty.
Yeah.
And he has great stories about it. It's really, he's...
And he was like probably like a 16-year-old kid at the time.
I think he was probably like 18. Maybe he's probably like 18, 19 years old. Like that. He's this great bridge between these generations because he went from writing, you know, for like one of the last Catskills comedians, one of the last Borscht Belt comedians, to writing on the first season of Saturday Night Live. And which is, you know, obviously an entirely different type of comedy. And, you know, Alan created these incredible classic characters, you know, in those first seasons, like Gilda Radner's Rosanna uh-huh. Dana. And these are all old, like my, you know, I don't know how many people remember these characters, but also, you know, Samurai Delicatessen, all of these things that that he did, you know, sort of cross this bridge from, you know, old world cat, you know, Borscht Belt to new world, you know, Saturday Night Live, and then ultimately things like, you know, modern stand-up.
And what was some of your favorite anecdotes that you got from some of the people that are contributing to the course?
You know, I don't want to give it all away.
Don't give
it. And also, you know, we talked to so many people.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of my favorite moments in an interview is with Kamau Bell.
Modern comedy is a Jewish American story.
Obviously, comedy is no longer a Jewish field. You know, everybody does comedy. And I would say the Jews now are, you know, a minority in the comedy world. You know, obviously in the mid late 20th century, it was the opposite. But Kamau Bell said something really interesting. You know, he talked about sort of the trajectory of a comedy chronology of major figures. And he talked about how he said something like, if you don't have Lenny Bruce, you don't have Richard Pryor. And if you don't have Richard Pryor, you don't have Eddie Murphy. And if you don't have Eddie Murphy, you don't have Chris Rock. And if you don't have Chris Rock, you don't have Dave Chappelle. So, you know, Jewish contributions to comedy affected other people as well. And that's really valuable to consider, just as, you know, a cultural phenomenon that occurs within the field.
And who would you consider your kind of comedy Mount Rushmore?
Oh, wow.
Jewish comedy Mount Rushmore.
That's very difficult.
It doesn't have to be put into stone.
It would be like a Mount Rushmore of like 20 heads. You know, you could go from Groucho to, you know, the Three Stooges to, I mean, this isn't necessarily stand-up, but it's you know, Jews in comedy. Bondo. But, you know, Jerry Lewis, Rickles, Shelley Berman, Woody Allen, who's sort of been canceled, but his stand-up, his early stand-up from the 1960s is amazing. It's mm-hmm. like, it's groundbreaking.
Yeah, the moose bit.
What?
The moose bit.
Right. Yeah, the moose bit. It's a classic.
First prize goes to the Berkowitzes. A married couple dressed in a moose suit. The moose comes in second.
It's a classic. But, you know, Lenny Bruce, obviously. Robert Klein. We interview Robert Klein as well, but Robert Klein, major figure. You know, goes up Gilbert Gottfried, Dave Attell, I love. I mean, it's endless. There are so many great Jewish comedians. It's almost absurd.
What artifacts? It mentioned in the release that there are artifacts from Jewish comedy. What in particular are some of the artifacts?
Right. So, you know, because YIVO, where I work, and that's the organization that produced it, is a historical research institute. We have very large archives. And, you know, this stuff ranges from, you know, wax cylinder recordings of, you know, early Yiddish and Yinglish comedy routines to early printed records. We have a pretty large collection of sheet music, and this is all sheet music that is comedy songs. And this is all from the Jew Face vaudeville era. And this is all, you know, rare material. There are many, many recordings, and it goes from, you know, the early period through people like Lenny Bruce, Bell Barth, who was, you know, who's far less well known, but she was sort of a body comedienne in the 1950s and 60s. And she, interestingly, like Lenny Bruce, was arrested on obscenity charges. You know, obviously, I don't think she fought it, which is why it didn't make, you know, much news, or didn't make as much of a, you know, media sensation as Lenny Bruce did. But, you know, she was really in the same boat as he was, which is just sort of an interesting historical note. So there are a lot of recordings. And then, you know, to a certain degree, as we get up, we also have a huge number of books. There are dozens and dozens of Jewish joke books, you know, from the 1860s to today. That's also an interesting publishing phenomenon. There are, you know, probably in the low hundreds of different Jewish joke books, you know, and also books about humor. But, and then as you get to the more modern era, you wind up with, you know, records. That's sort of the most common thing. We also have a figurine of Joan Rivers, which is a more recent phenomenon. And then you wind up, and then at the end, you really just wind up with video. And that's really, I mean, I wouldn't consider that archival, but, you know, we do present as much as we can of this kind of material.
And just a couple last questions here. What is something surprising that you learned by putting together this course?
I think I would say that the most surprising thing to me was what I talked about earlier about this phenomenon of the drag wedding as the, you know, first form of Jewish entertainment in the Borscht Belt. That was that, like, that I'd never heard of and didn't know about. And so that was, you know, as a historian and I guess a bit of a nerd, that would stand out as something, you know, really unusual.
Just a big general broad stroke. What is Jewish comedy's place in comedy history?
That's a hard question. I would say that it has a pretty significant place. You know, because during the development of stand-up comedy in America, you know, from, you know, the 30s through, let's say, the 1980s, when you have this transition from vaudeville to the sort of classic stand-up in a suit and tie telling jokes to the more introspective and personal stories of people like Lenny Bruce and Shelley Berman, through the modern stand-up era where you have people like Robert Klein and you know, a variety of others, the Jews basically predominate the field. So their contribution, and, you know, typically their contribution is content-wise isn't necessarily Jewish. In fact, most often it's not. But, you know, as a distinct ethnic group, they're providing contribution on a larger scale than other people at this time. This obviously comes to change, but I guess I would liken it to a certain degree to, you know, if you asked, you know, what was the Italian contribution to opera? You know, it's, you couldn't tell the story without it. And that's sort of how I feel about, you know, the Jewish contribution to comedy.
And where can people find the course or sign up in and all that?
There's a website. It's like, I mean, the course launches on March 21st. If you go to yivo.org, there will be something on the website. Yeah, I'm not intelligent enough to actually know the URL.
And that wraps up our episode on the history of Jews and comedy in America. I'd like to thank our guest, Eddie Portnoy. And remember, you can check out the course at vivo.org/comedy. And it launches March 21st. Also, remember, take some time to like, subscribe, comment, leave some stars on our website, comedyhistory101.com. So we can produce some more great episodes such as this, and we'll actually read your comments right here on the podcast. Also, once again, I'll be performing in London, England this Friday and Saturday, March 22nd and 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Rosemary Branch Theater. And you can find out more about those tour dates at Harmon Leon on the social medias or harmonleon.com. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode where I interview Brent Hodge, the director of the documentary I Am Chris Farley. And until next time, bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
I'm trying to use the phone!
Excuse me!
Comedy History 101.